street. He looks like he belongs on The Bachelor more than he belongs on the sideline as a head coach for a National Football League team. Am I missing something?
Dale Arnold.
What the heck do the Arizona Cardinals see besides a blindingly handsome man?
Rich Keefe.
It would be like the National Hockey League having 70% of the coaches be black and 95% of the players being white.
Dale and Keith.
Wait, are you telling me this is the same guy that was also rapping a moment ago?
What?
No way!
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
That's our shock voice.
What?
What happened?
What?
What? So there's a little thing that happens sometimes on our way to work. There's a Starbucks just up the street here.
Yes, there is.
Convenient on the commute in.
I like to treat myself on Thursdays.
And sometimes, you know, I'll stop in there and grab a, depending on timing.
That's also true.
A cup of coffee on my way in.
Yes.
And every once in a while, doesn't happen every time, but every once in a while, like today was one of those days.
Yeah.
There's a lady sitting in there.
Right.
With a Great Dane.
Who has got to be about 200 pounds.
Oh, God, he is.
It looks like a horse.
He is gigantic.
I love that guy.
Huge Great Dane with these sad, droopy eyes.
He does look sad to be there.
He does.
He never has a coffee or anything else. He's just kind of sitting there.
He sort of looks like he's begging for stuff, but she kind of rejects any overtures towards the Great Dane.
So I assume he's a service dog, because the first time I saw him, I went right up to him, but I didn't make the mistake of touching him.
No.
I know some people don't like that. So I asked the lady, I go, do you mind if I pet your dog? And she said, sorry, he's working. I'm like, well, it looks like he's sitting, but I respect your privacy, and I moved on. But I felt so bad because he looked like he wanted me to pet him.
I
would have given him a big hug. I would have maybe rode him around in there a little bit. I would have gone
That's
on there.
Actually my issue, because I always talk to him.
I do too. He's
I always say, hey, buddy,
he's
how you
boy.
Doing? I want to at least acknowledge that he's there.
He's just a mountain of a dog. And yeah, he goes there around the same time that we must, because he sits there. I don't know how long he's there for, but I can't imagine him fitting comfortably in too many cars.
Well, what's really funny about it, and what really sets it off for me, in addition to the fact that he's this gigantic moose of a dog with this great face.
Beautiful guy.
Is that he's sitting in her lap.
He sits in her lap, and his feet
with his back feet.
So his feet, though, his front feet are touching the ground. His butt is sitting on her.
On her lap.
But it's like level, because like he's actually about that height anyway, so he's just barely off the ground. But yeah, I don't know. I wish I could hug him. That's all I want to do.
See, that's the thing. It's the perfect way to start your work day. You get to see this great dog.
Because I don't understand that. I never have. And I only watched the first episode of Dogs on Netflix, because I cried a couple of times during that. And
are you
going
to see that Dog's Way Home movie coming out this weekend?
No, that looks dumb. This is a real thing.
Hey,
this is a documentary
series.
Dogs
in it.
No, I know. That doesn't mean... remember the dog's purpose or whatever? They like tortured that dog. That was terrible.
This is different. They said there was no torturing of this dog.
Well, that's really nice to hear.
This
Netflix series, though, is pretty powerful stuff, and they have six different stories. The first one was about service dogs for kids with disabilities, and they meet these dogs, and it was an unbelievable story. I don't understand still why you can't pet a service dog. I understand why you can't give it treats. I get that part very clearly, because most of the affection and the attention needs to be with the owner, and I get that, but you can't even give them a little ear scratch? What's that about?
I think it's just frowned upon, more than likely, because they could throw them off from what they're
I guess. It distracts them from the person they're supposed to be helping,
but
I guess.
But is the Great Dane a service dog?
I think any dog, if trained.
I know they can be.
If they go through the system, they can.
Is this one specifically? Are they wearing a jacket or anything?
He wasn't wearing a jacket, but the woman that he was with said he's working. So I'm like, I guess he's on the... I don't know if he works at Starbucks
is keeping people away from her.
That's true.
Because it's working.
That's true.
My nephew is a canine officer. He was in the Air Force. Now he's in private practice and working in parts of the world I can't talk about. So he's had several service dogs, but I mean working canine animals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he says, generally speaking, if you say, hey, do you mind if I pet your dog? And
he says, okay.
He can say, sure, go ahead. And the dog will be great. Now, you don't just reach out.
No, you don't do that.
You don't do that.
You don't do that. It's their personal space as well. You can't just run up and start petting another human, can you? No, not. It's 2019. You'll get in a lot of trouble for that.
You can't host Oscars. You can't be heads of company and do that.
You can't do
anymore.
Any of that. But yeah, that poor dog, I do like seeing him, but I feel bad. I'd like to give him a treat or give him something.
He looks sad.
I mean, his eyes are droopy.
He's got those droopy eyes. I think that's just how he looks.
Maybe next time I'll ask if I can take a picture of him. Like a selfie with him.
Like, you could stand beside him and he'd still be over waist height level.
Do you think she'd let me take a selfie with him?
I don't think
so. I'm like, I promise I won't touch him. Do you mind if I just snap a quick pic?
By the way, she never
Instagram.
Looks up or anything. She's always looking at her phone.
Yeah.
The dog is like begging for, hey,
he's got like...
Pet me?
droopy the dog eyes. He's just looking at you so sad. And you're like, nothing. I think I'm going to take a quick pick, maybe even a sneaky pick.
Oh.
Walk by a sneaky pick.
And by the way, if you snap the sneaky pick and he then takes your arm off, we'll know what kind of dog he really is.
I'm a dog person. I'm not, I don't fear any dogs. I feel like I could talk sense into any dog. But just fine.
This is like the pictures our caller Eddie took of the people at Walmart.
Yeah. Like an upskirt. He was taking upskirts, though, I think.
No, he was thinking of like overweight people. He's like, look at this guy.
And then he shames them. I'm not shaming him. I want the world to see this beautiful dog.
But now we have
he's a very nice dog. Ross, even you, a cat person, would like this dog.
He's got such a cool face.
Oh, he's amazing.
We have a texter who says, my niece has a Great Dane service dog.
Yeah.
This might be her.
Now, I'm curious, can you pet him? I don't know why you can't pet him.
I don't think
it's just in and out. I gotta be honest. Oh, he's a good guy. Who's a good guy? You're a good guy. That's all I want to do.
He looks like he's begging.
He just really wants somebody because she's never petting him.
She's always sitting right by the door.
Yeah, she looks annoyed at him. She's like mad about that he's there. I'm like, you're the one who got a 200-pound service dog. There's smaller ones you can get. Get a collie. It's something else. The dog's just a monster.
Oh, he outweighs her by a fair amount.
Significantly. She, no joke, could ride him around and he would have no problem. He wouldn't be worried about that at all. She might. I've never seen her out of the chair. She might ride him.
And maybe that's why he's sitting in her lap.
That's why that's the work.
Good point. Yeah, he's just taking a break. He just takes a little break in the corner, and then he gets right back up.
Okay, get on.
Then
he
gets to the counter. She rides him. I didn't see a saddle, but I wouldn't be surprised next time.
She could ride him bareback.
Please. It's 10 a.m. Come on.
See, we start the day talking about a good dog story, and you take it there.
I love that dog so much. Maybe next time. Did you ask for his name? I don't know his name.
I didn't dare.
No, she...
Because you told me that she's been...
She's not friendly.
And she doesn't look friendly.
No, she's not friendly.
So I always talk to him.
Yeah, I do too.
I always say, hey, buddy, how you doing?
Who's a good boy?
I always talk to him. Yeah. I never talk to... And she never even looks up.
No, never. And so think about how many people must talk to that dog. Because she sits right at the front, like right in the doorway. And Dale and I, 100% of the people I know that go into that Starbucks, talk to that dog. So everybody must talk to that dog.
My wife, who
she goes there.
Is not allowed, who's not allowed to be.
No, she was using a gift card, though. It's okay.
Oh, yes, now it's okay.
Rossi's very tight, and he's just saying, he's like, listen, you can't be going willy-nilly buying these expensive coffees.
But she has told me several times that she goes in there specifically to see this dog.
Yeah, he's a regular there.
And she says that the woman gives no love.
No, she's...
What you guys
are saying. Very cold.
But I'm thinking, like, you guys, no offense, maybe it's like, oh, it's a man thing. No, even her, she walks up, she goes, oh, hello, and the woman says nothing. The dog looks up, she's like, oh, like,
the dog
good
goes,
boy.
Help me. I think I heard him today say, help me.
Now, you know what it could be, too? It could be an elaborate con job.
You think she's robbing the place?
No. Oh. The only way she can go into Starbucks with her Great Dane is to say, oh, it's my service animal.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Right, because I couldn't bring my dog in there, right?
No.
He'd be jumping on everybody. It would be a real problem. He'd be knocking stuff over.
It's
chaos. He'd have to meet every single person in there. It'd be terrible.
Hi.
Hey, oh, I haven't seen you before. I'm like, oh, God. Yeah, that dog just kind of sits and hangs out. But, yeah, it was good to see him today.
Started my day in a nice way. Got to see the Great Dane at Starbucks.
Just a beauty.
I got nothing else.
That's it. All right. See you later.
You can clearly tell dog people. Like, Bill Smith, our production guy, brought a dog in here. And I go in there and I like pet him. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Keith goes in there.
I'm like on the floor rolling around.
Our intern, Nick, was in there like,
scratching his belly.
Well, you have a dog. It's a whole different world.
Rossi from like he stuck his arm out like as far away from his body as possible and just like patted him.
You got to get in there.
He's like, hello, dog. Hello, I'm a human. You're a dog. Yeah.
I was like, how what's the distance?
What's the proper etiquette here?
It was funny because the day Bill brought him in, Bill had given me a message. He said, hey, when you get a chance, can you come in and cut a spot? And I said, yeah, sure. I'll, you know, when I get a chance. And then when I finally went in, had I known, I'd have been in here an hour ago.
I don't know why he doesn't bring him every day.
Be fine
What's
by me.
What's wrong with that?
Ken Laird, producer of Mutt and Callahan, allergic to dogs.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that's a him problem, it sounds like. I mean, you have to take a pill or something. There's got to be some way to do it. Hold your nose. I don't know.
Former producer Andy, when he was here, he brought his dog one day, and they had to, like, put him, like, in a certain place because Ken, like, has, like, serious allergies
to it. Like a peanut allergy to dogs? Is that what you're saying?
That's what an allergy
is. Then there are certain dogs that are hypoallergenic.
Yes.
I think what they call it.
That is correct.
Because my one buddy who's allergic to everything, either that or his mom convinced him that he was allergic to everything.
That could be.
It's one of the two.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had a dog that was like one of those crazy ones that like the hair didn't mess him up, I guess.
Shih Tzus are supposed to be hypoallergenic.
Yeah, it looked kind of like that. It was something. It was in that range. It was a little guy, but so maybe we'll get one of those for Ken, so he can have a dog still.
Maybe
because you need the joy of having a dog in your life.
Do you think he's still there? Because we could send Caitlin up to surreptitiously snap a photo.
Yeah,
of him.
Go take a sneaky pic. yeah, that'd be good. Invite him in studio. He come in studio
sometime.
Oh, bring
him down.
The lady can sit here in the corner and be, you know, rude to people and angry and selfish and everything else.
All those That's things fine. That make her. It's fine by us.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, we do
have... What else do you have?
We do have sports stuff we'll talk about. And yeah. By the way, Peter King, he's got travel issues. He's going to join us at 10:30 today.
I got to ask him about Antonio Brown. I got to.
Well, he's going to be somewhere, and it won't be Pittsburgh, I don't think.
No, I know. But he was so... anti-Antonio Brown. Last week when we talked to him, we asked him, and you asked him about Mike Tomlin, we asked him about Antonio Brown and how that all played out, but then he did an interview with Mike Florio after he talked to us, and he said he removed Antonio Brown from his All-Pro ballot.
Right.
So he was so disgusted with how things went there, so I just got to ask him about that.
Well, now, just think about this from Mike Tomlin's perspective, and I know, you know, basically if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers coach, you're the coach for life.
Right.
But you've had two issues this year. You had Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell would not return text messages from his head coach when his head coach was reaching out to him. You had Antonio Brown, who wouldn't return text messages or phone calls from his coach.
Mm.
Now, you're
what does
two,
that tell
you're
you?
Two problem children this year. And by the way, in Antonio Brown's case, children might be the exact right word.
Seems a little like that, yes.
So they have so little respect for their head coach, they won't even return his texts or phone calls.
Yeah, that's pretty bad, isn't it? I mean, and you go back to Le'Veon Bell, and that is more of a front office situation. You know, Antonio Brown, to the best of our knowledge, is not mad about money or anything like that. Le'Veon Bell, it was all business. This was, I have to be a franchise tag for a second straight year. As a running back, he wants all the money.
His was a business decision.
His was all business.
I understood
But still,
him.
I'm yeah. with you, though. But still, so that starts out as a general manager conflict. But then if you're not even talking to Mike Tomlin, what's going on there? So how good could that relationship possibly have been? And the reality is, you can't treat Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown like the 53rd player. I know that's always like, hey, they're all the same. They're all professional athletes. Well, yeah, but... the guys that are better do have a different set of rules, and it seemed like he had lost those guys completely.
I just wonder what the culture's like there, because they've had issues, a lot of them centered around Antonio Brown, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of discipline in that organization.
No.
And I don't think the fact that you let Joey Porter go is suddenly going to fix everything there.
No, probably not. And it also seems like, I think Roethlisberger has to be part of the problem, too. Doesn't he? I mean, he's the guy. He's been there forever. He's the quarterback. And it just seems like, and we've played examples in the past, he goes on his radio show. He sort of puts blame on other players all the time and doesn't really take responsibility, which I guess is classic Roethlisberger, for a lot of different things. And so that was also one of the issues that we heard about Antonio Brown. And I'm not saying he handled it correctly, because he didn't.
He didn't.
But the relationship between Roethlisberger and Tomlin, I think some of the other players were a little annoyed by that, I guess. I don't know. It's just funny because even with the Belichick-Brady relationship conversation that we had all last year, not this year, but all last year.
What was their relationship like?
Yeah, we had a lot of that, but that didn't affect on the field.
No, what
and that didn't affect other players.
And we knew that despite what we thought was a rocky relationship,
yeah.
Every Tuesday they're in Belichick's office going over what plays do I like
right.
and what plays do we not like. And they're doing all the stuff that coaches and quarterbacks do where, you know, in this case with these star players – they don't even want to talk to him.
But they didn't have a player go AWOL. Like, they didn't have a player who held out all season long and then have other players on his team raid his locker. Remember that whole scene? Like, all this stuff, not that everything's perfect with the Patriots at all times, but something that played out in Pittsburgh would just never happen here. And that's not just as a Patriots fan saying that. It's just very clear.
You get the impression that some guys, obviously, you don't want to see talented players leave. Some, you know, they know that Antonio Brown might be the best wide receiver in football. You want him to be part of your team. And you get the sense that there are other guys who are just saying, you know what, just go. Just get this over with.
Yeah,
get
because they
here.
Had the same feeling about Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
They did. It got to a point where even the offensive linemen were like,
out.
Forget it. Like, if you're not here, which was, that one was even more strange because usually players are going to side with players when it comes to money. Like, they, if everybody's making more money, that's usually a good thing. And they kind of bailed on Le'Veon Bell. And maybe part of that was hey, James Conner's here. And turns out James Conner's pretty good.
He's really good.
He's pretty good. And the same thing with Pittsburgh. Because I think one of the issues, it sounds like, was Antonio Brown, I guess, wasn't named team MVP, which really shouldn't matter. It reminded me of Patriot Player of the Week or whatever the hell it was that was in the Wickersham
article.
Did Brady
have the parking
yeah.
spot?
Yeah, you're like, oh, what? But Juju Smith-Schuster is also really, really good. And they do a really, really good job at drafting wide receivers. Now, you can always have two or even three. Like, so it's not like he's going to replace Brown completely because he's, you know, they both get thrown to a ton.
If I named a Patriots Player of the Year this year, I'd name Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
And my guess is if that happened, Tom Brady would say, okay. Good for him.
You think he'd show up on Sunday?
I think he'd be there.
Yeah, I think he might show up on Sunday. Now, maybe things like that would perturb him just a little bit. I don't know. I mean, that one...
Maybe
I would
motivate him.
Yeah, maybe. But you're right. It's not going to change. He's still going to be out there on the field. He's not going to throw a hissy fit. And that's what it seems like Antonio Brown did. And what's weird is Antonio Brown's been there 8 years, whatever it is. Like, he's been there a while. And it seems like... This is the worst. Like, all usually by the time you're 30, you might not. Maybe he would have acted like this as a 22, 23, 24 year old, but not as a 30 year old. And it seems like he's kind of going the other way. Now, he had the Facebook Live thing a couple of years ago. That was in the locker room. Remember, while Mike Tomlin's talking, wasn't paying attention at all to him. By the way,
that tells you almost everything you need to know about how much respect they have for their head coach.
Yeah, I don't think that's changed at all. And we talked about that at the time. I remember we were on together. We were saying, like, look at this. Like, they're a very talented team, and that is really the GM and the president and the scouts and all those guys. They do an unbelievable job at drafting and acquiring talent. And then Mike Tomlin, I don't think gets the most out of them, and they clearly don't have the highest level of respect for them. That's obvious.
You go back to the James Harrison divorce from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And you add that into the mix, and it almost seems like there's something going on there that centers around the head coach. And I'm not absolving Antonio Brown of anything here.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, not that Le'Veon Bell, as you said, he made a business decision. Everybody understands that. Whether you like it or not, you understand it. But he won't even return the coach's text messages.
No, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of teams in the league that structure is probably the same as Pittsburgh, but the reason why Pittsburgh is ahead of them is just because of all the talent. Like, the talent is overwhelming. So you sort of start the season out, you're going to win, would they win 8 games this year? So you're probably automatically going to win 8 games, and if you put it together, you should win 10, 11, 12 with that amount of talent. But they're just, it seems dysfunctional. Like, they should have won more over the last 8 years than they have.
Another coach has another coaching vacancy has disappeared. Adam Gase going to the Jets.
So not Mike McCarthy. There's a lot of buzz.
Well,
Mike McCarthy said Jets
basically
are nothing.
Said that's the only job I want. You know, and really put all of his cards on the table. And they said, yeah, well, we didn't want you. So Adam Gase, who got fired in Miami at the end of the season, gets hired, you know, very quickly by the New York Jets. You're now down to two openings left. Cincinnati is left, and Miami is left.
So one of the things they've said about Adam Gase, and because I remember I was surprised that he got fired. I didn't think he was that bad.
Sure.
I think he kind of got a raw deal. He was there for 3 years. They made the playoffs his first year. He went 10-6. Then they went 6-10, and this past year they went 7-9. Like, how many games did Ryan Tannehill play over those 3 years? So you were using a backup quarterback for so much time there. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter, if you look at the times, whether as a head coach with Miami or an offensive coordinator with Denver or Chicago, he was there for the best year Peyton Manning had. He was there for one of the best years Jay Cutler had and the best year Ryan Tannehill had. And so obviously the hope is that Sam Darnold is going to be good under Adam Gase. I thought he was a decent coach, but it is kind of funny when you think about it. You know, Rex Ryan went from the Jets to the Bills, so he stayed within the division. You're still butting heads with Bill Belichick, and you're coming out on the wrong end. Like, is Adam
going to be any better there?
I can't imagine. Like, is Adam Gase really?
Yeah, we thought Miami was ahead of the Jets in terms of the pursuit of the Patriots.
You thought so, but maybe they were just. They're kind of. If you keep Tannehill, I feel like you're at a 8-8 type of level. Like, that's kind of where they are. Whereas at least Sam Darnold, you have an opportunity there. Like, it's probably a better spot for Adam Gase because you have a quarterback that could be the guy of the future. Like, Tannehill's not the guy. Darnold is, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but he at least has more of an upside.
We'll shuffle the deck a little bit on Thursday. Normally, we have Peter King on later on in the program, but because of travel issues for him, we're going to talk to him coming up next. We'll get to your calls as well in just a few minutes. 617-779-7937. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
The Patriots' march to Atlanta starts right here as they get ready to do battle with the Chargers. React and talk about it right now. Now back to Dale and Keefe on Sports Radio, WEEI.
Every Thursday, we talk with Peter King from Football Night in America. Now, normally, we do this around 12:30 or thereabouts, but he's got to get on an airplane, I'm sure, to go to one of the playoff sites for this
coming
weekend.
Yeah, that's a good question. Where do you think he's going?
We'll ask him in just a few minutes.
Maybe he's on his way here. Maybe not.
He could hop on a train and get here.
One of four spots.
Yeah, we've narrowed down the options of where
true.
He could go. And
that's true.
While we vamp, while they
because NBC doesn't have a game. This is now all CBS and all Fox the rest of the way here.
I'm kind of disappointed the ESPN crew's done.
Too bad. Now, if you want to hear Tessitore and Witten again, you got to listen to or watch the Pro Bowl. I guess they also did the national championship game, but I never went over there.
I am not. Yeah, they were one of those. There were some other, different.
I just watched the standard.
I am not an all-star game fan, period.
No.
Especially not the Pro Bowl.
That's a lot worse.
Peter King, who joins us right now. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Dale, how's it going with you?
Doing great, thanks. So, which game site are you headed for to cover this weekend?
Well, I'm at JFK right now. I'm going to San Francisco. It's Freddie King's second birthday tomorrow.
Oh, even better.
There you go.
Yeah, we're making a little detour there, and then I'm going to New Orleans on late Saturday. So, I was torn, really, because I was really interested in the Patriots game and in the Chargers and all that. But I saw the Chargers last weekend, so I thought, hey, we'll go to see the Saints this weekend, and then we'll see what happens next weekend.
How good are the Chargers? We're trying to break them down this week, and it seems like they're pretty good across the board.
I think the big thing with them is that they don't have to win just one way. This is not the sort of Dan Fouts, John Jefferson Chargers. This is a very, very physical team, a team capable of playing a very physical style, but it's also a team that's capable of throwing the ball downfield as well. So I think it's sort of like, I've always said this about the Patriots on both sides of the ball. Every game plan for Josh McDaniels and on offense and clearly what the Patriots do on defense, it's always a snowflake. You never know exactly how they're going to play. I think the Chargers can be exactly that way.
You know, we're kind of curious. Today, the Chargers announced that they have signed kicker Nick Rose to their active roster today to do nothing but handle kickoff duty Sunday. I mean, kickoffs almost don't exist in the NFL anymore. You need a special guy for that?
I thought it was odd because what you're doing basically is you're basically saying that we don't trust Badgley to put the ball in the end zone. And against this team, we'd just rather eliminate the possibility of kickoffs. That's what I think anyway. I don't know. And the reason why, I'm not sure that it's I was surprised by it, but you have to know who your personnel is right now. And particularly with this team, they've had a lot of linebacker injuries. And so they're down people anyway. And so I'm thinking that what Tom Telesco, the GM, and Anthony Lynn, the coach, are thinking is basically that they have the ability to withstand, to take one spot of their roster, of their 45 who they dress this week, and to basically say, we want him to just kick the ball in the end zone seven times, or out of the end zone seven times, or five times, or three times, whatever. That's all I can think of. It seems a little odd to me, too.
And maybe the Patterson effect, one of the few teams in the league that you really don't want to kick to their return guy, I would guess.
That's an excellent point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right. You're right.
Which road AFC team, Colts or Chargers, do you think has the better chance of getting the win?
Chargers. Not that I don't think the Colts have a chance, and not that I think that either one of them is going to win. If I had to pick those two games, I'd pick the two home teams. But I think both the road teams have the capability of winning. One thing that's interesting to me about the Chargers right now is that they're a team that they feel can play a variety of ways. And it isn't that they just feel that they can play a variety of ways. They have played a variety of ways on both sides of the ball. So to me, when I look at their team, I just say, I don't really know what you're going to see on Sunday. I'm not really confident that I can predict whether, I mean, they might, you know, depending on the success they have with the run, I wouldn't be shocked if they ran the ball 55% of the time. They really, really tried to force the run against the Ravens the other day. It didn't work out particularly well, but that's what Anthony Lynn wants to do. He probably wants to do that a little bit more than Ken Wisenhunt, the offensive coordinator, but I think in this game, you know, he's going to want to keep the ball away from Tom Brady as much as he can.
Peter, looking at some of the coaching changes in the NFL, I'm curious why the Arizona Cardinals have decided that it's right to entrust their organization to a young head coach with a 35-44 record at the collegiate level and who just got fired by Texas Tech.
That's the question that everybody around the league really is asking. It's a gutsy, extremely risky hire, in my opinion, because what they're doing is they're going all in on one side of the ball. I'm going to have a graphic in my column on Monday that showed that shows what his Texas Tech teams were on defense.
It's ugly.
Consistently awful. And, you know, and so that makes, you know, when Sean McVay got the job with the Rams 2 years ago, you know, his most important hire was Wade Phillips. And, you know, the Rams, you know, clearly needed somebody to pay attention to the defense and actually to be, in essence, the co-coach of the team. That is exactly what they're going to try to do, I believe, you know, in Arizona. They're going to get a very strong defensive coordinator, and he's going to take over that side of the ball, and he's going to coach that part of the team. It's very clear that they are convinced that the way football is played now is going to be played, you know, with a wide open explosive offense. And so that's why they made this choice. There's no question it's risky. There's no question that both in terms of his track record is wonderful on offense, but as a head coach, it wasn't good. And it wasn't good just for a couple of years. It was not good for whatever, 5 or 6 years. So, I don't know. I'm going to be interested to watch and see this just like anybody else.
Is it fair to say that what happened last year with Josh McDaniels and the Colts impacted the amount of interest that teams had in him this year?
Well, I think it impacted. It probably impacted what happened in Green Bay, I would think, because clearly, if I'm Josh McDaniels, and look, I don't know what you know what he did in this postseason and what you know how many teams either he talked to or had some interest in, but I think he probably only had interest in Cleveland and Green Bay. Because why else would you leave New England if you're going a questionable situation? You're not leaving New England to go coach Tampa. But I think probably knowing how sort of arch conservative the Packers are as an organization and as a place, I think it probably did have something to do with it. And, you know, who knows how much it should have to do with it. But I think Josh knew at the time when he did what he did a year ago or 11 months ago that it could come back to impact him. And I think he's comfortable in the fact, although I'm sure he would have loved to coach the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure he's comfortable in the fact that at the time, knowing everything he knew about the Colts, that he would rather stay in New England than go to the Colts.
6 of the 8 coaching openings in the NFL have been filled, all 6 by white candidates. There are 2 remaining. Hugh Jackson perhaps will end up in Cincinnati. It's possible that Chris Richard will end up in Miami, perhaps Brian Flores. Will the people who decry the lack of minority coaches in the NFL have more ammunition this year?
Oh, they have it right now. When Steve Wilks gets 1 year to prove himself in Arizona, they have a horrible year, and he gets fired, and that seemed quite precipitous to me and to a lot of people, both who cover the game and who are in the game. I didn't think that was fair at all to Wilkes. But again, Dale, this is, in my opinion, going to be a never-ending struggle in the NFL until more African-American coaches such as Byron Leftwich get a chance not only to work with young quarterbacks, but to do things like call plays, to be what Eric Bieniemy is in Kansas City. You know, I was in Kansas City last week and did some fact-finding on Bieniemy. My opinion of him changed drastically. I think he's absolutely ready to be a head coach. And who knows? I mean, maybe one of these last two jobs goes to either Bieniemy, maybe Chris Richard in Miami, or Bieniemy in Cincinnati. I think there aren't a lot of people who would take that Cincinnati job, and I have no idea if Bieniemy would take it or if he wouldn't take it, but I'd rather have Eric Bieniemy coaching the team than Hugh Jackson, based on track record.
Now, Peter, I know last week you said you had Antonio Brown on your All-Pro ballot, and then you removed him from the ballot. I guess my first question would be, has that ever happened before for you? Have you ever had somebody on there and then asked for it back to make a switch?
I don't ever remember doing that before, because the way I do my All-Pro team is that before week 17, I sit down late that week, you know, this would have been like 2 weeks ago, Thursday or Friday, and just go over everything and basically fill out my ballot. I very often made changes after Sunday's games because some places are very, very close. And so in this particular case, the only reason I change it is because, Antonio Brown went AWOL on the Steelers. Now, you know, I got into this a couple of days ago with Deion Sanders, who claims that Antonio Brown had permission to be AWOL, but I find it very, very hard to believe that any coach is going to allow a player to be away from the team for 3 or 4 days and then just show up on game day and play. I don't believe it. So, whatever happened, he didn't play in the game and he had something to do with it. And in my opinion, I just felt like I can't vote for that guy. I wouldn't vote for him for anything this year.
Now, what about Hall of Fame when that comes up? Now, he probably has a few more years left in his career and then the waiting period and all of that, but would this be something that you would hold against him then?
I mean, hold against him? I think it would be a factor, but I doubt sincerely that this would stand in the way of him being a Hall of Fame player. It's a blip on his career, not a good blip, but, I mean, he's on a Hall of Fame path right now. He's got 837 catches, and he's 30 years old. He's the first guy in history to have 6 consecutive 100 catch seasons. He's a great, great football player. He's definitely one of the 3 or 5 best receivers in football. It's just, I can't stomach and give him honors in a year in which, for 6% of the season, he wasn't there and it was his doing.
There's no way he can be in Pittsburgh next year, is there?
Here's what I think, that the Steelers over the years have given up on some guys when they have become a huge problem, like Santonio Holmes. He was sort of exiled to New York. I wouldn't be shocked if he is traded. I know Chris Mortensen has said it's very likely he will be traded. I don't doubt that at all. But the Steeler way is to let this thing settle down and in about a month have a confab with Brown to see if there's any grounds under which you guys could work together again. Steelers are much better with him than without him, almost no matter what they would trade for him, but we'll see.
Peter, we always appreciate the time. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
See you, Peter.
Peter King, Football Night in America, joining us. We'll get back to the calls with you in just a couple of minutes here at 617-779-7937. I agree that the Steeler way is to let this thing calm down and then see what you can do, but that didn't work with Le'Veon Bell.
It did not.
They tried, and it didn't work.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, if Mike Tomlin, Ben Roethlisberger, and Antonio Brown are all there together next year, it's not going to work.
I'll be shocked if they're all there together.
Right.
617-779-7937. There's been a proposal out there, an interesting proposal on how the Patriots could end up with their quarterback of the future.
Is that right?
I'll give it to you when we come back. Dale and Keith, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Take Dale and Keefe with you wherever you go. Download the Radio.com app. Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
So could Kyler Murray go in the first round? I actually think he could, even if he shouldn't.
I think he would.
I think when it comes down to it at the end of the day, especially if we continue to get this influx of college coaches bringing in college systems to the next level. But when it comes down to it, I just think it's the rule of it only takes one. And with Kyler Murray, somebody will sell themselves, even if it's at the end of round one, like it was with Lamar Jackson. They said, yeah. And here's the thing. Kyler Murray is a better passer than Lamar Jackson.
He is. He's much smaller.
Yes.
Well, that's shorter.
That's a good point, too.
Much shorter.
So you might see more ability to develop in Lamar. But with Kyler, there are teams that are going to say, well, if we can get him on the move and get him rolling out and fit him into a certain type of structure, to that team, he might be worth a first-round pick.
So the whole Kyler Murray thing has kind of taken on a life of its own over the last 24 hours, making Rich Keefe very excited.
Let's just remember that Rich Keefe was way out in front.
Way out in front.
Rich Keefe said he was going to be playing in the NFL. Rich Keefe said he was going to be a first-round pick. And we are headed in that direction, aren't we, Dale? Well, who are those two geniuses? I love both of those guys.
Whoever they are, they're smart.
I like those
wicked
guys.
Wicked smart.
These guys from Bleacher Report. So yesterday when the
one of the best sites.
When the report started to percolate.
No slideshows. Very easy to maneuver there. Love that. Love that site. A lot of good stuff.
So no pop-up ads?
None.
He hasn't declared yet. Has to declare by Monday. Right. Monday is the deadline.
A lot of smoke around it, though.
There's a lot of smoke. Yeah. There's a lot of talk about the fact that Kyler Murray could come out. There have been some interesting analysis of the whole Kyler Murray thing. You just heard it there. He's really small, which could shake some teams' confidence in selecting him.
Yes.
But Anthony Becht, former NFL tight end, NFL analyst right now, he had an interesting proposal that he put out there.
All right,
and
Anthony, I'll play along.
Just throwing this out there.
I'll play along, Anthony.
How about if the Arizona Cardinals trade Josh Rosen to the Patriots, select Kyler Murray as their quarterback of the future, the Patriots get their quarterback of the future to follow Tom Brady at a relatively inexpensive price?
All right, so there's a lot in there. There's a lot to unpack. First of all, for those who do not know, the Arizona Cardinals have the number one overall pick in the upcoming draft. They were 3-13. They fired their coach after 1 year.
So if they fell in love with Kyler Murray, they could guarantee they get him.
One overall is pretty wild. Although Baker Mayfield, again, last year at this time, Baker Mayfield was not the number one pick. And then as we got closer and closer to the draft, he went shooting up the rankings and then was the number one pick and looks like the right choice there at number one. So yeah, they could guarantee they could get whoever they wanted. It would fit the Cardinals' mold. Last year, they started the year with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback, and they just fired their rookie head coach, and they might trade away their rookie quarterback. So after a year, you're going to say, Josh Rosen wasn't our guy. Josh Rosen was terrible.
Well, they've got the excuse now.
He was the 10th overall pick
last year. No, I'm saying now what their excuse would be, hey, we got this new coach.
And he doesn't like
Rosen.
We gave
him the offense, and he's not comfortable with this guy at quarterback.
Kingsbury, I don't know who he'd rather like. My guess would be Kyler Murray over Josh Rosen. If you look at the guys he had success with in college, Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield to a lesser extent. It was at Texas Tech, not when he was at Oklahoma. And Patrick Mahomes. That's probably more like Kyler Murray than it would be Josh Rosen,
right?
Who seems like a bit of a stiff. 6'4", more of like the traditional pocket passer quarterback. Had a terrible rookie year, but tough spot. I don't know who would have done well there.
See, that's the secondary question. Would the Patriots have any interest in Josh Rosen as being their quarterback of the future?
I don't remember their post-Brady
quarterback.
Now, going back to last year, and a lot of it's just rumors. You don't know anything for fact, but you look at who they worked out and who they were kind of linked to. Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson were two names that came up last year, right? Like guys that the Patriots might be interested in. I don't remember if Josh Rosen was on that list. I want to say no.
Yeah. No, I remember there was a Rappaport report about
Baker. A Rappaport.
Well, okay.
Just a Rappaport.
Yeah, but it was only Lamar Jackson. I recently looked this up. Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and they weren't linked to either one.
Anybody
of them,
else.
Or Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, none of the Joshes.
So, I don't know. Now, and what would the Cardinals be looking to get for Josh Rosen, too, if they just selected him with the 10th overall pick? Now, that made him, the fourth quarterback taken, though? Right? Because Baker Mayfield was taken ahead of him, Sam Darnold was taken ahead of him, and I think Josh Allen were all taken ahead of him. So, with a lot of quarterbacks last year, and this draft doesn't feel that way.
I don't know about Senior Bowl.
I don't know what McShay was on.
I don't know.
Where did he come up with that?
Because generally speaking, you don't get to the Senior Bowl. Maybe you're not even at the quarterback.
Or you're that good and you just turn it down.
Right.
Maybe, possibly. Whereas this year, it seems like no quarterback. Now, Kyler Murray is a wild card, but the other quarterbacks that were set for the draft, it didn't seem like any of them were even first round grades. It would just be a team that's desperate saying, well, we got to take Dwayne Haskins or Will Greer. And you're like, I don't know if that's even a first round pick, but Murray could be different.
But doesn't this happen every year? Like every single year, there's some guy
get taken,
that gets jumped up early. The only defense this year is a lot of these early round picks, the first like 5-10 picks, all kind of have franchise type quarterbacks.
Top five picks in the draft coming up. Cardinals, who have Josh Rosen, but that's what we're talking about right now. 49ers have Jimmy Garoppolo. Jets have Sam Darnold. Oakland Raiders? Question mark?
It's a big contract they gave to Carr.
What is Gruden going to... Yeah, I mean, I guess. Number five is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You'd think they'd be in the market.
They should be.
They've got, you know, a new coach. Maybe he goes in there and says, you think we're going to win with this guy?
They should be. The New York Giants have the sixth pick.
Yeah, the next two are the ones.
They should take a guy. Get out of here with Eli Manning for another
year.
Well,
I've actually seen somebody else on Twitter today suggest that the Giants try to get Rosen from the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, I don't like Josh Rosen, but whatever. I mean, he was a high pick a year ago. You can't really look at his rookie year stats and say this is what he's going to be. That was a terrible situation for him. He went 3-10 as a starter. He had more picks than touchdowns. So he didn't really flash, I guess you could say. Like, Sam Darnold at least had moments. Josh Allen had a couple of weeks. Now, most of it was running. Lamar Jackson won games. Baker Mayfield looked like he was fantastic. Josh Rosen, out of all those first-round quarterbacks, he was definitely the worst one. But then again, if you put any guy in Arizona, how are they gonna do, really? Like, that's a tough spot.
It all comes down to, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, now you've got a brand-new offensive-minded head coach, but you've got the first overall pick. If you want Bosa, he's yours.
Yeah, and, you know, probably makes more sense.
Well, doesn't it? I mean,
that's what you should do.
As opposed to wheeling a second-year quarterback out,
yeah,
bringing in a rookie quarterback all over again. When Anthony Becht brought it up as a proposal, you thought about it, you went, oh, well, there's a way the Patriots could get what they're looking for. But then you think from the Cardinals' perspective, how does that make sense?
If they give up on Rosen, it really proves out why crappy organizations remain crappy, because you're using top 10 picks on quarterbacks in consecutive years, let alone two or 3 years. Like, look at the Browns, how many first-round pick quarterbacks the Browns went through before they got Baker Mayfield. And so now you're using one of the best chances to get real talent on your team, and you're just chasing quarterbacks year after year. You're never going to get out of your own way. You need to, like, Bosa makes the most sense. They should just draft him, be like, all right, here we go. We got a pass rusher, and we're gonna move on. And hopefully, if you hired Kingsbury, the hope is he is this offensive genius, and he can take any quarterback and make him good. So why would you want to then, you know, affect your defense, which also sucks, when you could have the slam dunk first round pick? So it's pretty fascinating. I personally would not want Josh Rosen with the Pats. Give me Kyler Murray.
Well, and realistically, he'd probably be available to you, you know, later on in the first round.
He should be. The Patriots, we don't know where they pick yet, right? Because it comes down to where they finish in the playoffs and all that. But
you're talking about a 5'9" quarterback who's already signed to play professional baseball. There's questions about whether he's going to want to continue to play baseball. Is he going to give that up? Which, as a quarterback in the NFL, he'd have to give it up.
Yeah, it's too consuming.
I mean, Russell Wilson, you know, was supposed to be a real good baseball player, too. And then they said, we Giller season or something.
Yeah, that wouldn't work at that position. But I think it's fascinating. And I think a first-round pick, you have to have him fully committed. But I do wonder if for some reason he falls later, and so it's less of a commitment, and you bring him in, like, wouldn't Kyler Murray actually be the type of guy that, if he was on the Patriots, hypothetically, you could use him on a few kind of gimmicky plays early on? Like, so Tom Brady's still the quarterback next year and probably the year after that. But in years past, I would say you would never want to take Brady off the field, or you'd never want to do Wildcat, or you'd never want to do these things.
Can we just acknowledge, though, that we don't want to throw the ball to Brady?
Thank you.
No matter what.
Let's not do that. But all of a sudden, here comes Kyler Murray, and now the team has to prepare for that. It feels like that could help Brady in the long run. Where, again, even last year, you'd say, I want him taking every snap. Don't mess around with any of this stupid stuff. But starting next year, if Kyler Murray goes in there and has an offensive package that they use, I think that'd be great.
What are the chances that Cliff Kingsbury decides, hey, you know, I really like that Manziel guy. He's up in Canada. We could go get him.
Bring him in. He should.
Wouldn't make much sense.
How's he doing? Did he recover from that concussion that he had?
When you've got Josh Rosen at quarterback, I mean, what's Manziel going to do?
But, they could use a backup. And you see that all the time when coordinators or head coaches have familiarity. I mean, that's why Mark Sanchez went to the Redskins, right? Because he played for that offensive coordinator. So, I mean, you could see something like that. But the Patriots, so you can already see how people are trying to figure out the next quarterback of the Patriots. You got to kind of think outside the box, and now you're thinking maybe even trade for a guy. Yeah, that's what he's doing.
He's trying to figure out a way that the Patriots can get their quarterback of the future, because chances are you're not going to draft him this year.
Even if
Kyler Murray's there when the Patriots draft, do you honestly think that a 5'9" quarterback is going to be the quarterback of the future?
Yes,
I don't.
I do. A 5'9" quarterback? No. Kyler Murray,
this
though?
Quarterback.
This guy? Yes, I do.
This quarterback who's smaller than the Great Dane we were both ogling at Starbucks.
That's a big Great Dane. I wouldn't compare him to him. You could have Kyler Murray ride into the stadium on that Great Dane. It'd be great.
617-779-7937. Jeff's in New Hampshire. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Hey, good morning. First time, long time.
Nice. Thank you.
This is Dale. I've been listening to you since the Mariners days.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
My question for Josh Rosen, since he was only second in the Wunderlichts to Allen, is why not think about packaging Gronk and picks up for Josh Rosen?
Let me just stop you right there, Jeff. You're interested in Josh Rosen's Wunderlich score?
Well, he scored a 29 on the Wunderlich, only second to Josh Allen.
What does that get us?
Well, the thing is, it's a smart quarterback, but Gronk, if we want to get rid of Gronk, he went to the U of A. So if we sent him to Arizona with picks, then we'd have a strong quarterback for the future.
I guess the question for me, Jeff, is whether or not you think there's much left in Gronk's tank here, because he looks like a guy who's closer to the end than...
I don't think Gronk's going to play anywhere else. I don't think you're going to be able to get anything for him. I think he's going to retire.
I mean, the Patriots tried to trade him, reportedly, this offseason. He basically said, I'm not going. I know he played collegiately in Arizona, but, you know, he's from Buffalo originally.
I'm surprised he led with the Wunderlich score. That's distracting to me.
Well, he is smart.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's a genius. Do you want him? He had a better Wunderlich score than anybody. You want him?
He is wicked smart.
He is.
I mean, there's something to be said for
now,
that.
Now, it was a misnomer that he had a perfect score. He did not get a 50, but he got like a high 30s or maybe low 40s, I think, is what he got. So Josh Rosen got a 29. Is that even that? I mean, I guess that's good. But I could care less about that. Really, as long as you don't get a 6, like a Morris Claiborne 4 or something like that. As long as you don't do that,
one of those things where you get points for getting your name right and basically nothing else.
For punctuality, you got some.
You showed up
points.
On time.
yeah, good for you.
617-779-7937. Bill's up in Maine. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, Bill?
Hey, I just wanted to touch base. You guys are talking about black coaches in the NFL and how the league is 70% black players. Well, it's just, I don't know why it has to be any different with the coaches. If the coaches are picking the best players for the job, whether they're black or white, that doesn't matter. They're picking black players because they're better. So wouldn't you take a white coach if he's the best candidate? You would take the white coach. It doesn't matter. It's not about race.
Yeah, you take the best. Take the best guy available. I agree.
That's right.
Take the best guy available. But I do wonder. But I do wonder, you have to admit, like, are the black coaches, not just the head coaches, but the coordinators and those guys, are they getting a fair shot at it like everybody else? Or is there an advantage to being a white coach?
Well, I think that's basically across the board in America. If you're a white, you have a slight advantage.
Right. And I think that's the point here. And I'm not saying, like, you should take each individual case and be like, all right, what was the hiring process like? Who was available? Who did you think was really the best guy? And that's why I think if you go into the year with two black coaches, it's just pretty glaring. 32 head coaching positions and only two black. That is pretty staggering. And you have to ask the question, why is that? Where there are not really viable candidates? And if that's true, okay, maybe all these teams hired the right guys. Well, then why? Like, what happened to that next level down? And that's when we're talking with Peter King, he was referencing guys like Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy. So guys that are coordinators or on coaching staffs now, are they getting as fair of a shot as Cliff Kingsbury and Adam Gase, who got fired and was out of a job for like 2 days?
There's a TV pundit in Dallas who we have we've played stuff from him in the past. His name is Dale Hansen. He has eviscerated the Cowboys in the past when they signed Greg Hardy.
Right.
He actually weighs in on this whole black coaches question as well. We'll play that next hour. We'll get back to your calls as well. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.